Okay. Now, first thing you'll notice about these notes is that my handwriting's gotten a lot better over the last few years. But that aside...
That's probably from students like me saying, "Man, what is that?" And you probably got tired of it.
I think, well, part of it is that the earlier notes, when I kind of wrote them, I wrote them for myself. And these I actually wrote to the level of being able to share them a little bit more. That's why, you know, electrodynamics, my notes, I think, were a lot neater. So, basically, the final exam is going to be on the two basic topics, gravitational waves and cosmology, or perturbation theory and gravitational radiation, whatever. And so, today we're going to talk about the perturbation theory stuff. And the idea is, you kind of already know how to do this. This is also known as linearized gravity, where what you're doing is you're treating gravity as if it's weak. And so any curvature is just a small perturbation of a flat space-time. And that these curvatures are actually linear. And so, in other words, there's nonlinearities that are naturally in the space-time, but we're kind of ignoring those because they're so small. And so you can see here, you start off with the metric, and you break it into the flat space metric, or Minkowski metric, plus some perturbation. And the inverse of that is to do the flat space metric minus the contravariant version of the perturbation. And so if you multiply these two together, you sort of lose the cross term, and you end up having perturbation times a perturbation, which is so small we just ignore it. And for this to work, these perturbations have to be much smaller than unity. And so this is known as linearized GR. Now, these perturbations are effectively going to be minor changes to the flat space. So you can almost think about as if you're working in Minkowski space. And so if you go from the unprimed to prime coordinates, you can get there just through a Lorentz transformation and ignoring any curvature of space. You'll also notice that, and I'm assuming that these perturbations can vary in time as well as space. Before we did a little bit of perturbation theory where we just had them varying in space. But you can also see that the Christoffel connection is just simply written in terms of derivatives of the perturbation, and then you have this inverse Minkowski metric term here. And the reason why we get this is because the perturbations are so small that multiplying a perturbation by a perturbation is just, you know, ignorable. And the Minkowski metric doesn't vary in any way.
And
so,
which one's the Minkowski?
Yeah. And so what happens is our Christoffel connection, it's simpler than what we're normally used to. But then the Riemann tensor is much simpler. Because the Riemann tensor, you know, it just comes from this sort of a commutation relationship between the Christoffel symbols. And you could see that that's all just written here in terms of second derivatives of the perturbation. And when you contract it, what you get is this. So this is the Ricci, where you can see that here you've got all these second derivative terms, and you're kind of like going through each one. And then you have H here, where H is what happens when you take the perturbation and you can just do the trace of it. So if you contract this whole thing again, what happens is you'll see some terms will kind of cancel out because, for example, if you raise mu or eta, then I think it's this term. Well, what ends up happening is basically you end up with just the Ricci scalar, which depends directly on the trace of the perturbation and then the second derivatives, the perturbation term. Okay. And so we take this a step further and we write the Einstein tensor. And the Einstein tensor here is written in terms of the Ricci scalar and Ricci tensor.
And you can see we're just using eta here because we can ignore the perturbation. And so we can write this by just plugging in the values for each of these two. And when you do that, this is the entire Einstein tensor or perturbed space. So if you know this perturbation, it's just a matter of just taking all these derivatives. Pretty straightforward. And the idea is that this Einstein tensor, it's exactly just taking the metric and assuming it's just perturbed space-time. But you can also derive this by using least action and assuming you have this Lagrangian and it varies with respect to the perturbation as opposed to varying with respect to the metric. Now, if you assume that the stress energy is conserved like it normally is, here you can say that, well, since you're perturbing around flat space, what you're really saying is that the partial derivative of this is zero. Not necessarily the covariant derivative, because the lowest non-vanishing order of the stress energy tensor is the same order as the perturbation. So, in other words, any errors that you're making on the right-hand side are the same as any errors you're making on the left-hand side, and they just kind of balance out. So, everything is a lot simpler. You don't even have to do a covariant derivative, you just do a partial derivative here. We also introduced the idea of a Lie derivative. And a Lie derivative is basically when you're taking a derivative along another vector. So if I take a Lie derivative along the x direction, it's really just saying, you know, I'm taking a derivative and then taking a gradient and taking a derivative along that direction. And so this is a Lie derivative along this zeta vector, which is not necessarily a coordinate, and it's applied to the metric. And so the metric ends up raising and lowering terms within the covariant derivative. And it ends up giving you this thing. And also, since the metric is symmetrical, that's why we have this thing symmetrized.
And is that a 2?
Yeah, that's a 2 in front of the covariant derivative term. Now, we also have this thing, epsilon, here is a parameter of perturbation. And so what we can do is we can take our perturbation and we can apply a gauge transformation to it in order to get the perturbation in a different gauge. And the idea here is that we're using this Lie derivative along the metric. And so we're basically saying we're going to take a derivative of the metric along some vector. And when you take this Lie derivative along that vector, you're going to add that a certain perturbation amount, epsilon, onto that. And then what that's going to do is it's going to kind of change you from being in one location to being in another location. And when you do that little perturbation on there, it's going to change your perturbation. But you're still going to be on the same manifold in the same physics, so this is a gauge transformation, just like it's a gauge transformation in electrodynamics, and it doesn't change anything. So the net result is that your Riemann tensor for a perturbation parameterized by epsilon 1 is the exact same as the Riemann tensor of a perturbation parameterized by epsilon 2. So it's the exact same concept of a gauge transformation you guys are used to before. And we use these basically to transform the perturbations to be easier to work with mathematically or to be easier to understand some of the physics that's going on. And so this was basically saying the Riemann tensor is invariant with respect to these gauge transformations. And since the Riemann tensor tells us about the gravity or the curvature of the space-time, then gravity is unaffected by the gauge transformations the same way that electromagnetic fields are unaffected by gauge transformations.
So that's equation 7.1.
Yeah, this is 7.15 in your book. Yeah. What I did was basically, they wrote it out as, you know, this huge thing. I felt like I'd simplify it a lot more. So the idea is that we know we have these perturbations which can vary in space and time, and we know we could perform gauge transformations on them, just like electromagnetic waves. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the perturbations and we're going to decompose them into different components. And so we can break any kind of perturbation into scalar, vector, and tensor components, where the scalar component is going like minus 2 phi, where phi is some scalar. And this could represent like gravity and what we did before. The vector component, we're basically taking the 0 I component, where I is one of the x, y, z coordinates. And so this is a vector perturbation, W. And the tensor perturbation is broken up into two parts. You've got Sij, which is the called the trace-free or the strain part of the perturbation, where we're actually taking the perturbation and we're subtracting out the trace of it. And then, or sorry.